Okay, time being 8:15, we will call the meeting of the Health and Human Services Reform Committee to order. We are just shy of a quorum this morning yet, so we can't officially call the meeting to order, but we will get moving. Thank you, everyone, for coming to the basement this morning instead of room 200. We appreciate that very much. Today we're going to be looking at the licensing provisions and just how we go about that in the state. First, we'll be reviewing what current state statute is on how we address licensing bills, and then we'll be looking into some of the different perspectives that other states and the national organizations have done for us in this area, and then taking testimony from the Department of Health and the licensing boards on the processes that we have here. So the intent with this is moving forward, we understand before a licensing bill comes forward, just what that will mean and what we can do in that area. And so without further ado, we will have the research department come up and give us some background on what we're doing currently with our processes. So welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name and give us your report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Sarah Sunderman. I'm a legislative analyst with the House Research Department. And today we are going to do a really brief overview of the current state statutes related to regulation of health-related occupations. So who regulates the health-related occupations? Well, there are at least 56 health-related occupations that are regulated by the state, and they're regulated either by the Minnesota Department of Health or the health-related licensing boards. The relevant statutes, which I believe everybody has in their folder, are 214.001 and 214.002. So 214.001, subdivision 1, states that it's the policy of Minnesota that regulation of certain occupations is in the interest of the people of the state, that it is desirable for boards to be comprised of members of the occupations and to develop policies and standards for those occupations, and that the state should administer regulation activities through departments of state government. Subdivision 2 goes into the criteria for regulation, and regulation should be required for health and safety of the people of Minnesota. We'll go into a little more detail on the specific criteria later in the presentation. And Subdivision 3 discusses how to implement new regulations. So starting with the most basic, which is creating civil actions and criminal prohibitions, then going to inspection requirements, and then registration or certification, and then licensure, which is the most stringent way to regulate an occupation. Then Section 214.002 discusses what evidence the legislature needs in support of regulating an occupation or increasing the regulations on an already regulated occupation. So Subdivision 1 requires evidence in support of the proposed new or expanded regulation of an occupation in the form of a written report submitted to the committee chair within 15 days of the introduction of the bill. Subdivision 2 lists the required contents of the report, and you'll see there's a list of 11. And Subdivision 3 requires additional contents for any proposed regulation of health-related occupations, including what the typical work settings and conditions for practitioners are, and whether practitioners work without supervision or if they're supervised by a regulated institution or health professional. As I said earlier, there are three main ways to regulate. The first and most stringent is licensure. Typically, requirements for qualifications in order to practice must be met and approved by the state. And typically, the requirements are a combination or most of the time all three of a licensing examination, a relevant degree or degrees, and a certain number of supervised in-field practice hours prior to licensure. The second way to regulate is registration. So with registration, typically someone may practice in an occupation without being registered but cannot use the word registered when describing their official title or using registered in any marketing materials or advertisements. The state keeps an official roster of registered practitioners, and some examples are athletic trainers and doulas. And something to note is that when we think of registered nurses are licensed by the Board of Nursing, not simply just registered. The third way to regulate is through certification. This is when a certain person must satisfy qualifications listed in a statute or a rule, which typically allows them to perform specific functions or supervise personnel on site at specific programs. Examples of this would be food managers, drinking water operators, and asbestos workers. Some occupations are unlicensed practitioners, such as unlicensed complementary and alternative healthcare practitioners. And they're not regulated by state licensure, registration, or certification, but they have to comply with the Client Bill of Rights in Chapter 146A and not engage in certain prohibited conduct. So this is a list of some examples of the occupations that the Department of Health regulates. Starting with allied health professionals, this is speech and language pathologists, audiologists, body art technicians, mortuary science, doulas, occupational therapists, nursing assistants. The environmental health professionals, lead and asbestos workers, food managers, wells and borings contractors, water supply system operators, food managers, and environmental health specialists. And as I mentioned on the previous slide, the unlicensed complementary and alternative healthcare practitioners include aromatherapy, meditation, massage therapy, mind-body healing practices, acupressure, culturally traditional healing practices, and several others. So where the Department of Health does not directly regulate the health-related occupations, the health licensing boards do. And I've listed them here, although I believe, yes, so this is a fairly exhaustive list, and it goes from behavioral health and therapy all the way down to veterinary medicine, covering most of what we think about as your typical health-related occupations. The Board of Medical Practice is one of the health licensing boards. It's a large board, and it regulates several different occupations within it related via licensure and registration. Of course, it includes physicians and surgeons. It also includes acupuncturists, athletic trainers, genetic counselors, naturopathic doctors, traditional midwives, respiratory therapists, and physician assistants. So each licensing board has its own disciplinary standards and mechanisms for discipline. And there are also civil and criminal penalties that punish or prevent illegal acts by providers and are enforced by consumers through civil actions and prosecutors through criminal action. So should a health-related occupation be regulated, we look to Section 214.001, Subdivision 2. As I said earlier, the regulation would be required for the safety and well-being of Minnesotans, and that goes for all occupations. Factors in 214.001 that the legislature must consider when presented with a proposal to regulate an occupation is whether the unregulated practice of the occupation may harm the health, safety, and welfare of Minnesotans, whether practicing the occupation requires special skills or training, and whether the public would benefit from the assurance of a person's ability to practice, whether Minnesotans may be protected more effectively by some other means, and whether overall cost effectiveness and the economic impact of regulation would be positive for Minnesota. Secondly, there has to be a report to the legislature under 214.002. And this must be in writing, as I said earlier, and submitted to the committee chairs. It, among other things, it must discuss why the level of regulation is being proposed, licensure, certification, registration, what the harm to the public would be by unregulated practice of the occupation or practice at the current level of regulation. So if an occupation is proposing licensure, why there needs to be licensure versus registration. How the proposed regulation would impact costs and the supply of providers. Some committee chairs have different preferences on this as far as length of report, time of submitting the report. And as you'll hear as this hearing goes on, the Department of Health and other stakeholders have developed a more detailed framework for describing and evaluating the scope of practice and new regulation and licensure proposals. Anyone has any questions? Happy to answer.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Sunderman, for your presentation this morning. Questions for Ms. Sunderman. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Sunderman. Because of the burgeoning number of healthcare professionals, and it's nice to see this layout of the three. But one of the things we've also seen is a redefining or expanding of scope. Mm-hmm. So is there any restriction or a slide rule that you put up next to things to figure out if their scope expands, say they're a registered, they're under mm-hmm. registration, if it expands and is somewhat more similar to someone that's in the licensure, do they change which type they're underneath?
Ms. Sunderman.
I believe they can. They would have to go through the process in 214.001 and 002 in order to officially change to licensure from registration with an expanded scope of practice.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Sunderman. So if they did that, of course they're coming to us for the expanded scope mm-hmm. and be the same place to take care of that. Have they ever bifurcated so that the ones that are at a certain level are underneath registration and the others in that profession with the expanded scope were under licensure?
Ms. Sunderman.
Not that I'm aware of, but I can check on that and get back to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your presentation. Yeah. the criticism about licensing, I'm not saying I share that, is that it sets up barriers and gates to other people entering the field. It can be used for that. And, of course, like Representative Quam just said, sometimes there's turf wars on scope of practice. How do you continue to monitor these licensing situations? Do you use a national standard? Like, in other words, in terms of reducing requirements and also or increasing requirements, do you reference what other states are doing across the nation? Or how do you continue to critique this so that licensing doesn't become a barrier to people entering a particular profession or industry and thereby limiting competition and ultimately
Representative Quam, Representative Grunhagen, that's a great question, but probably for one of the other testifiers that's coming up this morning. I'll let Ms. Sunderman respond, but you probably want to ask it again, too.
Right. I think that would be a better question for some of the later testifiers, but we do have in Section 214.002, one of the criteria is how it would impact the supply of providers in Minnesota to regulate something more stringently or to regulate it at all. So that is one of the factors that's considered.
Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Ms. Joe. Which testifier do you think I should ask that question of?
The Department of Health, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. First of all, I'm really glad we're talking about this topic. I really commend the chair for doing this, because this is really important, and this section of law, 214.001, is usually honored more in the breach than in the honoring. So I'm glad we're starting out with kind of what we have in statute. I just wanted to briefly address Representative Quam's question, or I'm sorry, Representative Gruenhagen. I did the same thing, right?
Well, you look
sorry. They're sitting close to each other. And anyway, it's early. Representative Gruenhagen, the person who's supposed to monitor this is you and me, right? We're the elected officials, and ultimately, if we want to ignore this and just somebody gives us a lot of contributions to our campaign and we like somebody who's in the profession and they come to us and they tell us that, you know, a lot of times people who want to increase their regulation are doing it because they want to be able to bill Medicaid. So that's, and sometimes that's valid. You know, I mean, there are a lot of good reasons. I think you said it very well. You know, this is something where it does protect often the health and safety of Minnesotans. On the other hand, it fences people out. Yes and yes. So it's up to us to figure out where to strike that balance ultimately. And that, I think, is, I would guess, is one of the reasons the chair is having this discussion now, because I would hope that this would stiffen the backbones of members a little bit more than we've seen sometimes in the past. I'm certainly not calling you out on that, Representative Gruenhagen, but just all of us. It's very, very difficult when you like the group that's in front of you, or you're, you know, you have a relative, or you've been in that profession yourself or something, and, you know, everybody thinks that they can do a lot of stuff, and it's up to us to figure out where those lines are appropriately drawn.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Leland. Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, just point of information. I think Representative Leland gave me a compliment, so I will accept that.
We'll note that in the minutes, Representative Gruenhagen. Any final questions for Ms. Sunderman? All right, seeing none, the committee thanks you this morning for your testimony. Next, members, we have an overview of what we have here, and we're fortunate today because we have two national experts on the scope of practice policies here with us. I'd like to invite Tara Johnson from NCSL and Lauren Block from NGA to give us more of a broad introduction to the scope of practice policies. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Lauren Block. Thank you, Chairman. It's a pleasure to have the opportunity to be here today. I'm a program director at the National Governors Association Center for Best Practices. The NGA is a bipartisan membership organization for all governors. The NGA Center is a 501c3 that is entirely grant-funded and has five divisions, including the health division. Healthcare workforce is one of our six core focus areas, and in 2015, we designed a project in conjunction with the National Conference of State Legislatures to help states evaluate healthcare workforce needs in relation to scope of practice policies. We initiated a project to work across the executive and legislative branches to help build consensus through shared learning and evaluation of scope of practice policies to help states address barriers to access to care, workforce shortages, cost containment objectives, and changes in the way that modern healthcare is delivered. We know that scope of practice issues are highly contentious and frequently result in long and drawn-out battles between professions to simultaneously ensure patient safety, address unmet workforce needs, and ensure that professionals work in complementary ways that may overlap but don't unnecessarily duplicate. In addition, we've worked with states to evaluate how emerging professions can provide underrepresented groups a career trajectory. Governor Dayton submitted an application as part of a competitive process to participate in the program, which includes members from both the executive and legislative branches. The state's application called for the development of a consensus evaluation framework that would give entities bringing proposals to the legislature an opportunity to provide consistent, objective, and comprehensive information to inform decision-making, including an evaluation of opposition perspectives and engagement with opponents. We were excited to work with Minnesota in part because it is a state already ahead of the curve with regard to thinking about how healthcare workforce strategies can address issues of access to care for rural and underserved populations. Frequently, when asked by states for examples of others that have taken innovative approaches both in the legislative and executive branches, we speak to the work of Minnesota. Minnesota was the first state to pass legislation recognizing dental therapists in 2009, increasing access to oral health services for underserved populations. In addition, in 2011, Minnesota passed legislation regarding community paramedics to meet the healthcare needs of individuals living in underserved communities. Many states have and continue to look towards these models. Therefore, when approached with the concept of building a consensus framework tool, we saw great potential for a new approach to add a level of objectivity to scope of practice policy review. In developing this tool, the NGA Center and NCSL met monthly with a core group of stakeholders representing the state and several healthcare workforce professions, and it includes, but it's not limited to, medicine, nursing, pharmacy, and dentistry, as well as interprofessional practice. And with this group, we worked to develop an initial framework for consideration by a broader stakeholder group. We helped convene more than 50 stakeholders representing education, training, policy, and practice to conduct an in-depth analysis of the framework and incorporated feedback to develop the product here before you today. The development of this tool is an opportunity to think beyond specific issues to add value in broader conversations about state healthcare workforce and access priorities, and to create stronger partnerships across branches of government and professions. I'd now like to turn it over to Tara Johnson, our partner from NCSL, who will provide additional insight about the work going on to date.
Thank you, Lauren, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tara Johnson, a senior policy specialist at the National Conference of State Legislatures. As many of the legislators in the room know, NCSL is a national bipartisan organization that serves the legislatures of all 50 states and territories. All 7,383 state legislators and about 30,000 legislative staff are members of NCSL. We provide policy research, analysis, and technical assistance around policy areas, ranging from health and human services to transportation, criminal justice, and we provide other types of support to states. Like the NGA Center, we do not advocate specific policy proposals, but seek to support states in achieving their goals. We at NCSL are excited to be a part of this project with the NGA Center because we consistently hear from our members about their concerns related to healthcare workforce shortages and meeting the needs of rural and underserved communities in their states. And we know that legislators each year consider thousands of bills directly related to scope of practice policy changes for various providers. For example, in the 2010 to 2011 legislative sessions, NCSL tracked almost 1,800 scope of practice bills in 54 jurisdictions. My colleagues in the health program at NCSL recently launched a new scope of practice website, scopeofpracticepolicy.org, which you can see on the screen here. Scopeofpracticepolicy.org is a website designed to provide policymakers with information on laws that govern scope of practice for nurse practitioners, physician assistants, dental hygienists, and dental therapists. The site includes 11 interactive state policy maps, a legislation database that tracks scope of practice bills in each state, case studies in scope of practice policy, and links to additional information. The laws around the nation are all very different. Scope of practice is an area where states define local solutions to local issues. Tracking what's happening around the country is definitely a challenge, and this website is designed to provide policymakers like yourselves with an easy reference source. There is a state profile for each state, and we hope that we may be able to feature Minnesota's work on the site for other states to learn from your experience. State laws are changed and updated frequently, and this website will be updated regularly to reflect changes in the laws. We have 135 bills tracked on the website from the 2015-2016 legislative sessions and anticipate tracking many more in the 2017 session. As Lauren said, we recognize the scope of practice policies can become contentious. This team here in Minnesota created a new tool, which NIDICA will explain in more depth, to serve as an objective resource to state legislators as you consider policy proposals. We already know that several professions are using the draft framework to think through potential policies, which is a great sign regarding the utility of the tool in practical application. We know that the team is interested to hear your feedback, and we are interested to see how the framework may be used and evolves over time as it promises to be a future resource to other states. On behalf of the NGA Center of Best Practices and the National Conference of State Legislatures, we look forward to supporting your work. I'll now turn it over to Nitika Mobai, who will walk you through the framework.
Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your presentation.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nitika Moebi. I'm with the Department of Health, Office of Rural Health and Primary Care. Thank you for the invitation and for your interest in the scope of practice policy tools that we've developed as part of the project. As Lauren mentioned, our work on this project started in the fall of 2015. There were three parts of an application that we submitted for a competitive technical assistance grant to NG and NCSL. The first part was to develop some kind of a consensus framework that we could provide to policymakers, staff, as well as parties of proposed bills, so they have some objective framework to evaluate the policy proposals around scope of practice. The second part of our proposal was to develop a tool to assess progress and barriers that still remain to recently enacted scope of practice laws and to identify some action steps or strategies to mitigate those processes. This effort was steered by a core team of members that consisted of legislators, the governor's office representation, academic health deans, leadership from the licensing boards, and staff from the Department of Health. As Lauren mentioned, the team met monthly to make progress, to coalesce around this idea, to develop a consensus framework, and then develop working on the tools. As you know best, scope of practice proposals are highly contentious. They're often rife with competing interests and turf battles. Acknowledging this, the core team wanted to provide some kind of an objectivity and develop a framework that could both assist policymakers as you evaluate the scope of practice proposals that come to you, but also provide some additional guidance to parties that want to propose bills so they understand the kinds of considerations that are going to be looked at as you make your decisions. I will now ask that you turn your attention to a handout in your packet that is titled Framework for Describing and Evaluating Scope of Practice and or New Licensure Proposals. So, 4 or 5 page handout. This is the framework that we collectively developed as a team. It is divided into two parts. The first part is for the groups that are actually proposing the bill. That particular part is divided into two sections. The first section is really a very a summary level overview that the groups are required to provide, just a summary level description of their proposal, their rationale for why they want to introduce the bill, a brief statement about its importance, and what kinds of problems it's addressing and solving. The second section of part one is space for the proposal sponsor, the proposing party, to provide additional information and to organize their thoughts in domains that the core team thought were important. There were 8 domains that are identified, and each domain has about 2 to 5 sub-questions. And I'll just walk us briefly through each of the domains and the sub-questions. The main domains are public health, public safety and well-being, access, quality, cost, care transformation implications, regulation, education and professional supervision, finance issues, workforce impacts, proposal supporters and opponents, and reporting guidelines. I'm now looking at domain 1 on the second page of section 2. And I'll just briefly read through some of the sub-questions that are part of each of the domain. Describe using evidence to the extent possible how the proposed scope and regulation may improve or may harm the health, safety, and welfare of the public. Is there any research evidence that the proposed changes may have risks to the public? If so, please cite. Will a regulatory entity or board have authority to discipline practitioners? Describe any proposed disciplinary measures to safeguard against unethical or unfit professionals, and how can consumers access this information? Under the domain of access, cost, quality, care transformation implications, describe how the proposed changes will affect the availability, cost, delivery, and quality of healthcare and accessibility. Describe the unmet healthcare needs of the population, including health disparities, that can be served under this proposal and how the proposal will contribute to meeting those needs. describe whether the proposed proposal includes provisions to encourage or requires practitioners to serve underserved populations. Describe how the proposal is intended to contribute to an evolving healthcare delivery and payment system, such as interprofessional and collaborative practice, innovations in technology, ensuring cultural agility of practitioners, etc. Under the domain of regulation, if the services or individuals are currently unregulated, what is the proposed form of credentialing or regulation? State the rationale for the proposed form, and if a lesser degree of regulation is available, why was that not selected? Describe if regulatory entity or board currently exists or will be proposed. Will it have statutory authority to develop rules related to a change or an expanded scope of emerging profession, determine standards for education and training programs, and assessment of competence? If not, state why not. Is there model legislation for the profession available at the national level? If so, from which organization and which states have adopted it, and any relevant information about its implementation? Does the proposal overlap with current scope of practice of other professionals or practitioners? If so, describe the overlap. And this question was not intended to imply that overlap is necessarily negative. Under the domain of education and professional supervision, describe the training, education, and experience required for this professional based on the proposal and any plans to grandfather in prior qualifications or experience as appropriate. Is the education program available, or what is the plan to make it available to train, and information about accreditation is required? Do provisions exist, or are they going to be proposed to ensure that practitioners maintain a level of competency in their services? Is there a recommended level of supervision that's required for this practitioner? And if so, additional information about the terms, level, extent, et cetera, to be enclosed. Under the domain of finance and reimbursement, describe how and by whom will the new and expanded services be compensated, and what costs and savings would accrue and to whom. Describe whether reimbursement is available for these services in other states, and the projected regulatory cost to state government, and how the proposal includes to offset those costs. There's also space to note any fiscal impact of the proposed bill and to note those figures in the packet. Under the domain of workforce impacts, describe what is known about the projected supply and how many individuals are expected to practice under the proposed bill, and any geographic availability of providers and services if available. Describe with evidence where possible how the new and modified proposal will impact the overall supply of the proposed services and the demand for the services. Under the domain of proposal supporters and opponents, this section was included so sponsors understand and should attempt to address concerns of the opposition before submitting this document. What organizations and groups have developed or reviewed the proposal, and any organizations representing the profession that's seeking the regulation in approximate numbers of each in Minnesota? The anticipated or already documented position of professional associations that are impacted by the proposal, and any actions taken to minimize or resolve conflict or disagreement with those likely opposing the proposal, and the stance of consumer advocacy groups that oppose the proposal and why. The last domain is about reporting to the legislature. This includes any provision that the policymakers may feel is necessary for a progress report at a certain certain period of time from the proposed once the scope of practice law has been passed. So these are the eight domains that were part of this proposal. As you can tell, the questions were meant to be mutually exclusive and collectively exhaustive to the extent that the group could foresee. The second part of the proposal is a summary note. This is really a companion document and is meant for policymakers and staffers to just make notes across each of the domains as you review the proposal and note any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end, there are also some additional considerations that may be of interest to you around health equity or impact to your constituents as you review the proposal. Following Sarah's presentation and comments from Representative Liebling, I just want to state that, you know, this framework touches on and intellectually borrows from, but also goes beyond Statute 214, Subdivision 002 and 3. It also draws from, and I see there's a packet, there's a handout in your packet about the legislative questionnaire that was required for APRN's independent practice that was required to fill out, and so we heavily drew from that, and also some other resources that were put out by the Federation of State Medical Boards and the National Council of State Boards of Nursing. I'm sorry, my slides haven't quite kept up with my remarks. Back in August of last year, we convened a stakeholder group at the Normandale Community College because we felt like we wanted to get some more eyes and ears and feedback from the actual intended users of this tool. And so we convened legislators and policymakers, lobbyists, professional associations, and health licensing boards. And with the help of our national partners, we were able to get some good feedback on these tools that then help us incorporate. And so the finished document is in front of you today. We feel like it may not be perfect, but it was well vetted, and we got good feedback on its usability and its intended use. Mr. Chair, you may also recall that last fall, this work was before the Legislative Healthcare Workforce Commission. And in its final report in 2016, the commission recommended that the legislature adopt this common framework to evaluate scope of practice proposals, and that this incoming chair's use this framework and edit it as necessary. And as we get feedback, we want to make sure we incorporate that feedback and make it as usable as possible. This tool is also available on our website, and NCSL will soon be featuring it as well. As I mentioned, there were two parts to our proposal when we made the proposal to NG and NCSL. One was developing the scope of practice consensus framework, and the other one was to develop a tool to identify some progress and barriers to recently enacted scope of practice policies. And so I will just direct your attention to yet another handout in your packet titled Barrier Assessment for Scope of Practice Laws. And this is, again, intended for people who are proposing the bill or evaluating the current status of the bill. And they can identify the proposed change that happened, when it actually happened, the overall goal of the change, and systematically work through the barriers that they think are still in place that haven't quite met the spirit of the law, and identify the type of barrier, a strategy or an action step, a timeline and actors, et cetera, and some measures of progress. So this is just sort of an action plan, a blueprint for an action plan to continue to make progress on barriers that still remain to scope of practice laws. So that concludes my remarks on the framework that we developed. I'm happy to take any questions. I see that there are some.
All right, questions for the testifiers. Representative Liebling.
Thank you. Thank you to the testifier. I certainly think this is a good step forward. Yeah, if you modeled it off the some of what was done with the APRN issue, I was the chair of this committee at that time, and following 214, mm-hmm. I required, and that wasn't the only licensing bill that session. There were a lot of them, and what we did was require everyone, we took 214, added to it, not as extensively as you've done here, and then required everybody who wanted to bring a licensing bill to fill that out as a starting point. So we had standardized sort of information on everybody. But then what we did also is give the opponents of that change an opportunity to respond point by point to everything that the proponents said. And I wonder if that's something you considered, because that's kind of, to me, glaringly missing from what you just presented. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for policymakers, legislators who generally are not going to be expert in the particular field that's being discussed, to evaluate what people say. Everybody who, and so that's one comment. Second point is this really, obviously the methodology here is going to cross over for people who want licensing changes and scope of practice changes. Could you kind of address that? Because we're talking now about scope of practice. 214 is really directed to licensing, but obviously they're not separate. So two points I wanted to address.
Ms. Moebi.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I have two answers. One is simple, one is not quite that simple. To your point about getting input from those that are opposing the proposal, in Domain G, there is specific some questions about requiring or asking if the proposing party has talked with and understood the conflict or the position that the opponents may take, with the expectation that once they come to you with a scope of practice proposal, some of those conflicts and controversial positions would have been mediated. Not all would have been, but this goes to the second part of my question. What hasn't been quite spelled out in this framework is the process or the mechanics of making it available, and that's and one of the outstanding issues there is how do other parties know that such a framework exists and that they may be asked to fill the same framework if they're opposing the proposal. So should the chairs require that this be the framework that's adopted and all parties are aware that if you want to propose a bill and expect a hearing in a certain committee, that whether you propose, whether you're supporting or opposing it, this would be the proposal and the framework to follow. So I think that would help get the word out about its utility and adoption and importance to the policymakers.
Follow up, Representative Wheatley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, well, that's what we did. We put it on our website for the committee, and we said if you have a licensing bill, you must fill out this form. Mm-hmm. And we told everybody up front what we're going to do is post it on our website, and we're going to give X amount of time for anyone opposed to it, if they so choose, completely voluntary, to answer it kind of point by point, only the points that you are different on.
Right.
Kind of like what happens in a lawsuit. You know, somebody files a pleading, somebody answers if they disagree, and then the fact finder or the judge looks to, which things are really in dispute, and that kind of helps narrow down the issues. I think that really it's important for us as policymakers to do that, because frankly, just to ask a proponent, have they worked out the kinks with the possible opponents? Well, that works sometimes. But, I've seen cases where that party will say, yes, we have, and then somebody else will come in and say, no, you haven't.
Right.
So I don't think self-reporting, there's an awful lot at stake for people in these disputes. That's why they get so contentious.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only perhaps financial, but everybody feels so strongly about their profession and feels, like I said before, that they have total confidence in their own ability. And so that's why it can get really contentious. So I don't think you can just rely on the proponent to tell you who's going to be opposing.
Response, Ms. Miobi.
Representative Liebling, yes, I agree with you. I think, where the core team stopped was we developed the proposal. What we didn't develop was the process around its utility. And we thought it was best left to the chairs of the incoming committees to determine that. And if the chairs decide that it would be a similar process where you post the framework on your website and require and invite every party to use it and use that to bring their best case to the floor, then I think that would make sense. There's precedent to do it, and it sounds like it worked before. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Chair. Yeah, thanks for your presentation. And I think your packet here answers most of my questions. It looks like you work with, on these recommendations, the Minnesota Department of Health, the Office of Rural Health and Primary Care, and in partnership with the National Governors Association, the National Conference of Legislators. And I just ask one quick question, too. One of the things I've noticed since I've been up here, government is pretty good about adding things, okay, whether additional laws, requirements, or statutes. They're not real good about reducing or evaluating what they've done and actually eliminating some things. So my question would be, last time in the area of scope of practice or new licensure requirements, when is the last time we actually reduced some licensing requirements to make it easier for people who aren't in the profession to access it? Based on your recollection, can you think of any time that we actually reduced that?
Ms. Miobi.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that I'm the best person to answer that question, unfortunately.
Okay.
I might pump the question over to Sarah and her colleagues. I'm not sure that we would be tracking when there have been erosion of laws or reduction in requirements around scope of practice and licensure. But perhaps, you know, if they're around MDH licensed occupations, I'm happy to go back and do some additional research and let the committee and let Laura know and inform you about that.
All right. Thank you.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for the testifiers that we have in front of us? Seeing none, the committee thanks you for your time and your presentations this morning. It was all very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation.
Okay, and we do have a quorum now, so we'll call the committee to order as the licensing board testifiers make their way down. So we are officially in order, and Representative Olson moves the minutes for January 19th, since she was here before almost anyone else and had time to read these. And so are there any additions, corrections, or changes to be made to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the minutes from Thursday, January 19th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The minutes are adopted. All right, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your names for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Ruth Martinez. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice.
And I am Cody Weiberg, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy.
All right.
Thank you. And I would like to extend the regrets of Shirley Brecken, the Executive Director of the Board of Nursing, who also was on the core team with us and wasn't able to be here today, but she certainly wished she could have been. Mr. Chair, members, we really appreciated the opportunity to work with this core group to develop this tool, this framework for bringing forward scope of practice bills. I happen to regulate eight professions at the moment, as you noted, and two of the professions under the Board of Medical Practice Regulatory Authority have been working on scope of practice bills that may be presented this session. So I know at least one of those groups, the naturopathic doctors, actually used this framework in its developmental stage to try and assess, you know, how they were coming forward with that bill and trying to address some of the questions that might come up at legislative hearings. We also have another profession, the athletic trainers, who, even though they didn't use the tool themselves, I know that I, in my conversations with them, often went to the framework that we had been developing and counseling them on how they might put together some of their legislative language to try and address some of the concerns that I anticipated might come forward in a legislative process. So I think this tool is, building on, to Representative Liebling's point earlier, some of the questions that you raised during the APRN legislation, really trying to understand from different perspectives what questions will come up, who are the opponents, how do we identify the necessary educational and training requirements that align with the scope that's being requested. How do we all in our individual processes have the opportunity to assess a piece of legislation on all of those points? And I think this tool goes a long way to addressing some of those questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I pretty much echo what Ms. Martinez said. She and I and Shirley Brecken participated in this project and thought it was a very useful a project indeed. I've been involved here at the legislature for nearly 18 years, the last 11 as the executive director of the Board of Pharmacy, and the 7 years before that as the pharmacy program manager for DHS. And although I've only been involved over those years in a few scope issues, I've certainly seen a lot of testimony about scope bills in that time, and they often do get contentious. As Representative Liebling pointed out, there's a lot at stake. And so I think that this tool really could bring some clarity to the process of deciding, of helping legislators decide on these scope issues and I think on emerging licensing issues as well. The only thing I would add a little bit about the Board of Pharmacies, we're a little bit unique. We only regulate really one profession. I think we regulate one emerging profession, that's pharmacy technicians. But we do also regulate a whole bunch of different businesses. And I think this tool is going to be focused on the professions, not so much the businesses. A lot of the businesses we regulate, we actually have to regulate because of federal law, states are required to regulate them. And I see Representative Gruenhagen had to leave the room. I do have an answer to his question. It's not really so much as taking a requirement for registration or licensure away from someone to make it easier for them to enter the profession, so much as several years ago, all the healthcare licensing boards made sure we had processes in place to make it easier for military personnel that moved to the state and veterans that moved to the state for them to get their licenses more quickly, and if they were on active duty military, for their spouses to be licensed more quickly. So, we did try in that instance to be responsive and make sure that the licensing process was as efficient and quick as it could be.
All right. Well, thank you. One question I had for both of you, I know you make recommendations when there are scope changes and that sort of thing. I was just wondering what kind of process your boards go through in that recommendation process.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for that question. The Board of Medical Practice convenes its Policy and Planning Committee on a regular basis, and we initially vet requests for changes to scopes of practice for our regulated professions through our Policy and Planning Committee to make a recommendation to the full board about whether to take a position at all, whether that position should be to oppose, to support, or to remain neutral on a scope of practice request. And I will say that often the board, certainly our board, and I think some of the other boards as well, typically do not get too involved on determining scope of practice. We typically stay neutral on scope determinations. Our authority is to enforce the scope of practice that the legislature establishes in statute. We are looking more at whether the language of a bill gives us the capacity to enforce the statute. So we're looking really to see if we can establish and identify the educational and training requirements to issue credentials, how we can enforce things from a disciplinary perspective, and to make sure that the language provides us with the necessary authority to carry out the intent of the legislative authority.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, our board would do different things depending on what exactly was involved. So if there was a scope issue that didn't involve our board at all, we probably wouldn't do much. We actually get a lot of requests for input when there is a profession that has not before been able to prescribe. For example, I think the naturopaths are wanting to prescribe, and that's come up over the last several years. We often get requests from those groups actually to have input, and usually what I tell them is when it comes to who it is that's able to prescribe, if it actually doesn't involve the profession we regulate, we pretty much don't take a position on that. We're going to let the boards that regulate those people have more of a say into whether or not it's appropriate for them to prescribe. What we need in that case is simply to know who can prescribe so we can pass that information on to pharmacists so they know whose prescriptions are valid. When it's within our own profession, so for example, I mentioned that I personally consider pharmacy technicians to be sort of an emerging profession, and their duties over the years have increased to the point where we may actually end up considering them to be some sort of a profession. Right now we register them, we don't license them, but we are working with a task force of entities that represent the profession. And I'm doing a lot of the background research myself and accepting the materials that they have. And then when we are ready to do something, we think we can do some of what we want to do in rulemaking, I would present that to our board for their input.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I have just one additional comment I wanted to offer. And this is to the point of proponents and opponents of legislative changes. I think one of the things that we try and do as a regulatory board is to communicate with our professions that we regulate to assure that they have considered what other professions are being touched or impacted by any legislative change they may be proposing, and assuring that if there is an expanded scope or if there is oversight by another regulatory profession, that there's not conflict between statutes for other healthcare providers. And as regulatory boards, we convene routinely on a monthly basis to talk about common interests and issues that are coming before one or more of our boards. And this is where we often can identify when a scope change may actually impact more than one licensing board. And then we can counsel our professions on how they might approach that. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Martinez or Mr. Weiberg? Okay. Seeing none, the committee thanks you for coming in this morning. All right, members, we are ending quite a bit early this morning again. We should be back in room 200 on Thursday, and we'll have a few bills up then for we have a series of EMT bills that we'll be hearing on Thursday. So with that, the committee is adjourned.